Good afternoon. My name is Valerie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the CDC NHSN conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Lauren Solis from Premier. Ma'am, you may begin your conference.
Hey, thank you, Valerie, and good afternoon from Charlotte to everybody that's joined the call. The title of today's call is the CDC's National Healthcare Safety Network, a tool for infection prevention programs. I'm going to just make a couple quick announcements and then turn the call over to Gina Puglisi. She's the Vice President of the Premier Safety Institute, and she'll tell you a little bit about our speaker and today's program. Following today's presentation, as the operator said, she will give you a chance to ask questions. Before we open up the question and answer session, she'll give you its specific instructions on how to do that. But please feel free to ask questions throughout via the chat box if you'd like. I'll keep track of those, and we'll try to get them answered as well. As stated, this webcast is being recorded, and we'll post it to the Advisor Live homepage at premierinc.com within 24 hours of this call. We'll send you a follow-up email after the call. It'll give you specific instructions on how you can access all the information and materials. In that email will also be a link to a survey, and I'd like to thank you in advance for taking 2 minutes out of your time to take that for us. Your feedback is what helps us build the agendas for future calls. Again, thank you again for participating, and I'm going to turn it over to Gina. Gina?
Thank you, Lauren. This is Gina Puglisi, and I have the distinct pleasure of introducing our faculty today, Teresa Horan, a colleague and a friend for many years, and tell you a little about our program. Teresa Horan joined the CDC in 1984 as a surveillance coordinator for the nosocomial infection surveillance activity in hospital infections program, which is now called the Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion. And for those of you that have been in infection control for a long time, remember it as HIP or hospital infections. She has, for the last 20 years, played a very key role in developing the National Nosocomial Infection Surveillance System, or as it was known, was as NIS, which really was the worldwide leading model for surveillance of hospital infections. And she spent most of her career promoting it as a performance improvement tool throughout the world. In 2000, she started to lead the development team for the National Healthcare Safety Network, or NHSN, and she's been responsible for integrating and expanding CDC surveillance system into a single internet system, which is the NHSN. So she's responsible for leading the expansion of this and to include healthcare delivery venues beyond just the hospital setting, and also to assist with incorporating proven practices to prevent complications. Teresa is also on the faculty at Emory University, Rollins School of Public Health, and she's a captain in the U.S. Public Health Service Commission Corps. And she has also received many awards and honors for her work, including awards from HHS as well as APIC, Outstanding Achievement Awards. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Teresa Horan, who's going to tell us about NHSN and describe some of the features of it. Teresa?
Thanks, Gina, and thank you very much to Premier for inviting me to do this program with you today. I am really excited to be here. I hear we have a great turnout, so this is great. So let me get started so that we'll have plenty of time for your questions. The objectives are listed on this slide, and today what I hope to do is define the purposes of the National Healthcare Safety Network, or NHSN, provide an overview of NHSN reporting options, including some of our newer options, the multi-drug resistant organism and C. difficile associated disease, or MDRO and CDAD module, as well as the healthcare personnel safety component. And then also I would like to describe for you the group feature of NHSN and explain how it's used to facilitate mandatory reporting by states. So the purposes of NHSN are shown on this slide. They are to collect data from a sample of United States healthcare facilities that will permit the valid estimation of the magnitude of adverse events among patients and healthcare personnel, as well as the adherence to practices known to be associated with the prevention of healthcare-associated infection. And we know these as our process measures. We also strive to analyze and report the collected data to allow us to recognize trends. In addition, we want to provide facilities with risk-adjusted data that can be used for both inter-facility comparisons and, importantly, for local quality improvement activities. We also want to assist facilities in developing surveillance and analysis methods that allow timely recognition of patient and healthcare personnel safety problems so that can prompt intervention with appropriate measures. And finally, we want to use NHSN as a tool or a platform, a group of members that can be available to help with collaborative research studies. So periodically we make opportunities available to the NHSN membership to volunteer to be part of various research studies that they might be interested in. This slide is quite busy, but if you'll focus your attention on the purple and green states, these are the states that have the highest proportion of their member facilities in NHSN. So it should be no surprise to you that these are also states that use NHSN for mandatory reporting. In addition, you can see that unlike the NIST system, NHSN now has members in all 50 states as well as Puerto Rico. And as of a few days ago, when I made this slide, the number of facilities enrolled was 2,282. So we've grown tremendously from our NIST days, and we've expanded our coverage across the country. As I said, many of the states are using NHSN for meeting their mandates for public reporting, and this slide shows you how this is distributed. So beginning back in January of 2007, New York was the first state to begin using NHSN in this way, and we have 19 states that are or will soon be using NHSN for mandatory reporting. And you can see on the bottom of the slide that the types of events that states are choosing to focus on, by and large, are central line associated bloodstream infections or CLABSIs and surgical site infections. But there are other types of infections that are being looked at, and other types of events like dialysis events and process measures in a variety of states. So tremendous growth along these lines as well. The reason that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is able to conduct surveillance in hospitals is really due to a broad public health authority shown here as the Public Health Service Act. And it's not authority specific for HAIs. Rather, it is very broad surveillance authority. For that reason, we also felt that just as we had in the NIST system for the NHSN, we would want to be able to offer confidentiality protection to the facilities and, of course, to all the data that they provide under NHSN. And so Sections 304, 306, and 308D of the Public Health Service Act allow us to provide that protection. And the main purpose for this is to be sure that there's no incentive for under-reporting. And again, as you know, with the mandates of reporting in state health departments, there could be an incentive for under-reporting, but withdrew NHSN proper, reported to CDC, we wanted to discourage that, and therefore we have this assurance of confidentiality. In terms of what's required for data collection and reporting to be a member of NHSN, these are listed on the next two slides. We ask and require that each facility that's a member of NHSN submit what's known as a monthly reporting plan. And that plan simply tells CDC which of the components and which of the modules that facility will be doing that particular month. So you just simply let us know what you're doing, and I'll show you a screenshot of that later. And it's the plan that allows us to aggregate the data according to what you've, which module has been followed. There's a lot of flexibility in NHSN. We only require 6 months of data per year, and therefore, but the tool can be used for any data entry that you want to do. So it's really important for us to know exactly which months you're following the protocols. Once you choose those protocols, you need to adhere to them exactly, as described in the NHSN manual, and then also use this surveillance methodology as described in the manual, and I'll touch on that again briefly in a minute. The data need to be reported within 30 days of the end of the month. So if you're reporting data for May of 2009, the final data input should be no later than the end of June. Again, the requirement is for NHSN is only 6 months per year. State health departments that require use of NHSN may have a different requirement than that. We also require an annual survey for your facility, and that you pass quality acceptance checks that assess the data for completeness and accuracy. And those are built into the system. So those happen all along as you do data entry or try to import data. There is an enrollment process to become an NHSN member, and I know there's a lot of angst about that out in the community. It's an online process. It takes about 2 weeks because there's a paper mailing as part of it. One person at the facility that wishes to enroll will become known as the NHSN facility administrator, and that one person does the enrollment process. There's some training that needs to be done. These are essentially the steps listed below, which I won't go into. There's a whole web page on our website devoted to how to enroll. The important thing here is that there is a digital certificate that has to be applied for and then loaded onto the computer or computers that each individual user needs will be accessing, put onto the computers that individual will be using to access NHSN. So every user has to get a digital certificate, and that can take a little bit of time. But once that's all set up, then you're ready to go and collect data and enter it into NHSN. So let me give a brief overview of the different components that we have, and within those components, the modules for NHSN. There's currently three components: patient safety, healthcare personnel safety, and biovigilance. Right now, patient safety is fully operational and is the one that has over 2,200 participants. The healthcare personnel safety has not been launched yet, and I'll come back to that a little later. The biovigilance component has been launched and is currently being used by 9 pilot facilities, and I'll again touch on that briefly a little bit later. Within the patient safety component, there are 5 modules that are currently available: the device-associated module, procedure-associated module, medication-associated module, the multi-drug-resistant organism, and C. diff-associated diseases module, as well as a high-risk inpatient influenza module. And I'll go through each one of these briefly. The device-associated module has five options or events that can be monitored, shown on this slide. So three of them are ones that you're pretty familiar with, I'm sure, the central line-associated bloodstream infections, ventilator-associated pneumonia, and catheter-associated urinary tract infections. The process monitor on this in this module is central line insertion practices, or CLIP, and that looks at adherence to hand hygiene, protective sterile barriers, appropriate skin antiseptics, et cetera, when central lines are being inserted into patients. And then the final one is called a dialysis event, and that is for use in outpatient dialysis locations only. In the procedure-associated module, there are two options, surgical site infection and post-operative or post-procedure pneumonia. In the MDRO and CDAD module, there are two options. One is focusing on multidrug-resistant organisms, and the other is focusing on C. diff-associated diseases. In addition, that module includes some process measures. These are adherence to active surveillance testing if you're performing active surveillance testing, hand hygiene and gown and gloves use for those patients who are in contact precaution, as well as providing direct and proxy outcome measurements, for example, for healthcare-associated infection incidence rates for MDROs or a C. diff, as well as prevalence and incidence rates if you're performing active surveillance testing. Those metrics can be obtained by use of the MDRO module. This module is very flexible, and as a result, it tends to be a little complicated, but it provides you with a lot of information. The next module in the patient safety component is the high-risk inpatient influenza vaccination, or HRIV. And there are two methods. Method A is a summary method. Method B is a patient-level method. And what we strive to look for in this module, which is a process measurement module, is really at the proportion of high-risk patients getting vaccinated prior to discharge. So we're trying to take the opportunity to vaccinate in patients who are at high risk of influenza to make sure that they get their vaccine while they're hospitalized. And this is just a module for keeping track of that. So I mentioned that part of the requirements are to follow the surveillance methodology, and the surveillance methodology that we use in NHSN is what you're used to using if you've been doing healthcare-associated infection surveillance. That is, it's active, patient-based, and prospective, and it's priority-directed. What I mean by those terms is active surveillance is a trained infection professional, infection control or infection preventionist, a trained person that goes out and actively finds infections based on a set of case definitions. It's patient-based because we're looking at patients, we're looking at patient charts, we're not relying on a single source of information such as the laboratory. It's a multiple different sources of data to get the information. It's prospective because we're looking forward in time. As the patients come in, we monitor them for the presence of infections. And it's priority-directed because you are choosing which locations, patient care areas you want to monitor, what patient populations, are you interested in device-associated infections, surgical site infections. You're choosing the priority every month. And using this methodology for the patient safety component, we can get risk-adjusted incidence rates of data. And those rates are published annually in our National Healthcare Safety Network report. We've published two of those so far. We should publish another one later this year, which will include data from 2006 through 2008. And that report includes, for example, tables that look like this. This happens to be a table of the pooled means and key percentiles of the distribution of central line-associated bloodstream infection rates. This particular one is stratified by type of location, and the locations shown here happen to all be intensive care units. But there are other non-intensive care unit rate data shown in the report as well. The pooled mean rates are shown for each location. For example, looking across the slide on the first row, we have burn units. 22 of those were, we used data from 22 of those to calculate the pooled mean central line associated bloodstream infection rate of 5.6 per 1,000 central line days. And then the percentile distribution is shown for those locations that we have at least 20 units reporting data. So in this case, all of the data here have a percentile distribution. The median or 50th percentile is 3.8 for burn, and you can see the other key percentiles are lower and higher than that. And it's these data to which you can compare if you have a burn unit or any other type of unit. We also have an annual report of antimicrobial resistant pathogens associated with healthcare-associated infections, and this was our first one, and we'll be preparing another report soon. And in addition, the dialysis surveillance report is another separate report that comes out of the NHSN outpatient dialysis event option. In terms of the protocols, they're briefly outlined here, and on our website there's a lot more detail, and in the NHSN manual there's a lot more detail. But in a nutshell, for the device-associated module, a facility will choose which patient populations or patient care locations they want to monitor and which events within that location they want to focus. So, for example, they could choose their medical surgical ICU and focus on, for example, central line associated bloodstream infections. For outpatient dialysis centers, their reporting is slightly different. They report on hospitalizations, IV antimicrobial starts, and positive blood cultures for their dialysis patients. In the procedure associated module, the facility chooses which procedures they want to monitor and which events. So, for example, they could choose to monitor cesarean sections in a given month and look for the presence of surgical site infections. And in the medication-associated module, the facility chooses to monitor either antimicrobial use or antimicrobial resistance or both. Both of these are summary data only. There's no infections that are monitored. And I'll show you a screenshot of the data entry tool for that a little later. In the MDRO and CDAD module, the facility chooses the patient care areas or locations, the organisms that they want to follow, and the events they want to monitor, and whether they want to also monitor any of the process measures. So again, for example, they could choose the location medical ICU, and in that medical ICU, look for healthcare-associated infections and what a term called lab-identified events that are due to MRSA, or methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. And I'll show you a screen of, I believe, of a lab ID event shortly. That is a proxy measure using basically laboratory data rather than the case definition of a healthcare-associated infection. HH, or hand hygiene, and GG, gown and gloves compliance, in the medical ICU could also be chosen as an option in any given month. Another example of how the MDRO module choices work is that one could look at all of their inpatient locations for a particular organism like VRE if they were monitoring the lab ID events. Again, there's a lot of detail in the NHSN manual that describes this protocol fully and explains the type of metrics and the requirements. In the HRIV, or high-risk inpatient influenza vaccination module, again, facilities can choose either the summary method, method A, which just is counts, or focus on individual patient-level data, inputting information about whether or not a high-risk individual is offered and accepts the vaccination. So this is the next several slides are just some screenshots of how one gets into NHSN and what it looks like. With the digital certificate requirement, you will be logging in through CDC's Secure Data Network, which is hosted on this Public Health Partners page. And you can see in the upper left-hand corner, when I log in, I have several options. Most of you will only have the NHSN reporting option, and that's where you go to, you click on that, and it takes you into the NHSN. This is the monthly reporting plan screen for NHSN in edit mode, meaning I've already entered it, and I've just pulled it up to look at it, and now I might make some changes to it. But before we kind of walk through that a little bit, if you look at the left-hand side, we have what we call the navigation bar in the light blue. And that is how, by clicking through the choices on the navigation bar, that's how one moves around in the NHSN reporting tool, or the application, as we call it. So in this case, I went to reporting plan, and I clicked on find. I found the one for January 2007, and I, at the bottom of it, I clicked edit. So now I'm in edit mode for this particular page. And the point of this is also just to show you that the users every month enter a plan or tell us that no NHSN patient safety modules are followed this month. If modules are followed, though, then they can be specified as shown on the slide. So in this particular case, three locations have been selected for monitoring. Under the device-associated module in the surgical ICU, I've picked to follow central line-associated bloodstream infections, ventilator-associated pneumonias, and catheter-associated UTIs, whereas skipping down to the third row, the med-surg ICU, only central line BSIs are being monitored. In the procedure-associated module section, four procedures have been chosen for monitoring SSIs among the inpatients only. So each month a plan would get filed telling us what you're doing that you want CDC to use for aggregate data purposes. Other infections besides these can be entered, other procedures can be entered, with the rules for what's required change based on them not being in plan. This is the reporting plan, just scrolling down the screen further to show you the MDRO module portion of the plan. And in this case, I have two sections set up, one in our 3 South location. The organism chosen for monitoring is going to be MRSA, and in the second row, it shows that I'm going to be focusing on infection surveillance in that particular location, whereas in the burn unit, I'll be looking at MRSA, and over to the right-hand side, I'll be doing hand hygiene, gown and glove monitoring, as well as reporting lab ID events. So there's a lot of flexibility, as I mentioned. When one is ready to enter data, you simply click Add Event, and a series of, a screen will come up, which I'll show you over the next series of slides. There's always patient information. As you can see there with the red asterisk, there are only three personal identifiers collected, a patient ID number, gender, and date of birth. Once that information is entered, then the event itself can be entered. In this case, I'm entering a bloodstream infection in whose onset was April 25th, 2009, did not follow an operative procedure, was not an MDRO infection, meaning that I did not monitor, I was not doing MDRO surveillance in this particular location, the MSICU, in the month of April. Now, I might have an MDRO infection to report, but if I'm not doing the module MDRO, then I would answer no to that field. The date of admission is listed, and then the risk factors for bloodstream infection. In this case, it's simply central line, yes or no. Notice that you can also optionally add information on where that particular central line was inserted and the date it was inserted, but that's optional, not required. Continuing on the data entry screen, once the bloodstream infection type is selected, the specific event type drop-down list will have just a couple of choices. In this case, reporting a laboratory-confirmed bloodstream infection. And once I indicate that that's the infection, the specific event I want to report, then the screen will modify to show me the criteria that are possible for me to select. And this is where an individual, where you enter in what were the, how did this person meet the criteria for LCBI, this particular patient. And in this case, it was the patient had a fever and a recognized pathogen from one or more blood cultures. Continuing down the page, did the patient die? No. And were pathogens identified? Well, yes, if it's an LCBI, there has to be pathogens. And in this case, it was a Staph aureus. And you can see when Staph aureus is entered, there are 10 antibiotics that must be included. I'm only showing you five of them here, and their susceptibility results. So that's what's showing here. So that's essentially how you enter any kind of infection record. In terms of the denominator data or summary data for the ICU or non-neonatal intensive care or specialty care areas, there's a summary data add feature on the navigation bar, which will bring up a screen like the one shown here. And in this case, it's entering medical surgical ICU for January 07, and you simply put in what's required according to what you have specified you're doing in your plan. So in this case, I've specified only bloodstream infection, central line bloodstream infection, so I only have to enter central line days and patient days. This is an example of the lab ID event data entry screen, and I'm showing it because it is different than the infection data entry screen that you just saw. Once you pick the event type of laboratory identified MDRO or CDAT event or lab ID event, the screen, this is all the data that has to be entered. So the date the specimen was collected, the organism that you're reporting, is, in this case, MRSA. Was it an outpatient, yes or no? The specimen source, in this case, from a wound. The date the patient was admitted to the facility, if they're admitted. If they're an outpatient, you don't have to include that piece of information. What location or patient care area they were admitted to, if they were admitted, and the date they were admitted. And then finally, was there any documented prior evidence of infection or colonization with this particular organism, yes or no? And was this patient discharged from your facility in the past 3 months? So these are the sum total of data that are required for the lab ID event reporting. For the MDRO summary data entry, again, it's a little bit different, and I'm showing it to you here because it is our newest, one of our newest components, and I know people have had questions about it. In this case, the burn unit was the focus of the surveillance for the month of April 2009, and based on the plan, which showed lab ID events and hand hygiene and gown and gloves, you can see that there are red asterisks next to those portions of the screen, meaning that those data have to be entered, as well as, because it's an inpatient location, the number of inpatient days and the number of admissions. So those are the denominator data that and the process measure data required given the plan entry that we made earlier. This is a sample screenshot of a procedure, an operative procedure data entry screen. And I show it because it is slightly different than what we saw for the events. These data will be used as denominators. So for every procedure you say in the plan you want to follow, in this case, say colon surgery, a record for every one of those colon surgeries performed during that month has to be entered or imported. There is an import feature, which you can see on the navigation bar at the top left. The information about the patient's the same, the procedure date, and then some procedure details, which give us the risk factor information that we need for the stratification and analysis. Moving on to the medication-associated module, we have the one option, antimicrobial use and resistance, and you can focus on either aspect or both. This is a screenshot of the microbiology data for the antimicrobial resistance portion of the module. And basically, for certain bug-drug combinations like vancomycin and or staph, coag-negative staph and vancomycin, we simply ask you for that particular patient care location to tell us the number of susceptible, intermediate, and resistant isolates for that bug-drug combination in the month. On the for the antimicrobial use portion, there's a pharmacy data form. Again, by location, we collect the quantity of each particular type of antibiotic that is used. In either grams or international units. There's a lot of analytic capability with NHSN, and I'm just showing you a screenshot of that. I don't have time to go through it, but you can see that you can do line lists, frequency tables, bar and pie charts, rate tables. In some of the options, there are control charts as well. And there's a lot of advanced and custom features that can be explored and used for analyzing your data. Let me quickly move to healthcare personnel safety component modules. There are two of those, the blood and body fluid exposure with or without follow-up monitoring, that is the laboratory and post-exposure prophylaxis pieces, as well as the healthcare worker vaccination module, which right now focuses on the influenza immunization. This module will be ready in time for the coming flu season. I know we've said that before, but we're very committed to getting it done this summer so that it will be ready, and we're working on it very hard right now. The other component I mentioned that has been launched is the biovigilance component, which currently has one module. This is the hemovigilance module. It is a public-private partnership between CDC and the American Association of Blood Banks, and that is being used right now by 9 hospitals for the next 6 months, after which time we'll make any modifications that we discovered during the pilot phase and then hopefully launch at the beginning of next year to any hospital that wants to use it. It's about the reporting of transfusion-associated adverse reactions and incidents associated with blood or blood products, and is meant to be used by transfusion medicine services, not by infection prevention or occupational health. Finally, I want to just touch on how data are shared in NHSN to give you an idea of how states have been able to use NHSN for meeting their mandates. CDC, because of its confidentiality protection, cannot send data directly to anyone. We can't send it to the state health department or anyone else. Therefore, health departments or others have to obtain data directly from the NHSN facilities, and they can do that by either becoming a group in NHSN and giving and having the facility give access rights to some or all of their data, or by accepting data files or reports from facilities, which NHSN can provide as well. By and large, though, the group feature is how most data sharing is occurring in NHSN. So an entity like a health department would enroll as a group after being nominated by an NHSN member facility. Once that group is formed, they will have a joining password and an ID number that they will give to all of the facilities in their jurisdiction that they would like to have join their group. Then the facility itself joins the group and gives access rights to some of their data to the group, allowing then the group to analyze the data either through NHSN analysis features or by downloading and using another software package that they might be familiar with. It's important to know, though, that when a facility gives access rights to a group, that doesn't mean that you will be able to see anyone else's data. Unless it comes from the group in a report to you. But you will not have access to other people's data, nor will they have access to yours directly. And a facility can join as many groups as it would like. So this is a picture of what the Confer Rights screen looks like for patient safety data. And you can see the navigation bar has four choices: confer rights, join a group, leave the group, or nominate a group. And so what we're looking at now is the confer rights part of that. And this particular Play Hospital Medical Center East has decided to join Teresa's test group and confer some rights to that group. So I've given rights to patient data without identifying information, to my monthly reporting plans, and to data analysis, but not to AUR, micro, or pharmacy data. And in addition, at the bottom, I've given rights for my surveys beginning in the year 2008 to my facility survey. That's the annual survey that hospitals do. In addition, you can specify which infections or other events that are not MDRO module events, what summary data, what denominator data, and what summary data for vaccines you want to give. So just going back to the top, in this particular case, all bloodstream central line associated bloodstream infections that are in plan are being conferred for the MedSurg ICU. That's how you read that first row. And in addition, surgical site infections following inpatient hip prosthesis are also being conferred. So this group will have access to those two types of events that when they occur in MedSurg ICUs or following hip prosthesis. And by clicking the Copy Locations to Summary Data button and Copy Procs to Denominator Data buttons, the next two rows will auto-populate to show which corresponding denominator data will go along with those. And then down at the bottom, flu vaccine data for all plans that are on file would also be conferred. For MDRO, there's a little bit more specificity. In this case, the burn unit is conferring rights for MRSA to lab ID events to this group. In the top and in the bottom, for the burn unit, also MRSA for admissions, patient days, hand hygiene, and gown and gloves. Okay, to wrap up then, I wanted to be sure you knew that we have a new, easier to navigate, we hope, web page or series of web pages. It's at www.cdc.gov/NHSN, and we welcome you to visit that site regularly. There's a lot of cool features, including a way to get email updates whenever we change something on the page, and just lots of information for you to help answer any questions that you might have. And finally, I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to address you today, and I look forward to your questions. I'll turn it back over to Gina.
Thank you, Teresa. That concludes our presentation. Now we're going to invite everyone listening to ask questions or to comment on what we've discussed. Before I ask the operator to give instructions to the participants, I have a question, Teresa. Has the surgical site infection data been published yet as part of those reports that you mentioned?
The surgical site infection data, yes, it has been published. It was published in our last report, and it is available on the website. If you go to the resource library, I believe you can find it. You can see it at the bottom of the screen. There's a particular button. The NHSN report for 2008 has SSI data in it.
Okay, so the reports that you footnoted in the American Journal of Infection Control and in Infection Control and Hospital Epi are on the CDC site.
Yes.
Okay, that question came in. And also, is there going to be a session at the conference on the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology this year on NHSN, and will it include MDRO and CDAD modules?
Okay, well, let's see. There's a couple of things. To my knowledge, there is no session on the MDRO and CDAD module at APIC. That was we were not asked to do that. There will be an NHSN members meeting on Monday evening. I believe it's 5:15 to 6:15 in the Floridian A room of the convention center. And I will be doing a professional development session, I believe it's Tuesday afternoon, that people had to pre-register for. So those are the three things that are going on relative to NHSN.
Okay, and for those of you, that's the APIC conference, and that's at www.apic.org for more information. Okay, operator, could you give instructions to our participants on how to log in a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you,
Valerie.
At
this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star, then the number 1. And we will pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. The first question will come from Deronda Henderson of Abbeville Nursing Home.
Go ahead.
Is any of this information from NHSN applicable to nursing homes? I've heard a lot of discussion about hospitals.
Yeah, thank you for your question. At this time, the patient safety component, which is the one that's currently active, probably doesn't have much that you would want to use, unless you could use the high-risk inpatient influenza vaccination monitor. But in terms of infections, because we use acute care definitions, it's probably not going to be applicable to your setting. Once we launch the healthcare personnel safety component, though, that certainly would have lots of things that you could do in terms of monitoring exposures and vaccination in your healthcare workers. We are actually talking about with a group of experts to try to look at the long-term care definitions and begin to strategize about how to develop a surveillance system for extended care facilities. And we'll be hosting a meeting here in Atlanta in August to discuss that. So stay tuned.
Thank you. Next question?
The next question will come from the line of McCarthy McCormick.
Hi, I have two questions. One is when you are participating, you said you wanted 6 months of participation per year. Is that continuous 6 months or is it 6 months over the period of an year. The second question is, in the MDRO component, are you looking for colonization as well as clinical infection, or just clinical infection alone?
Okay, thanks. Good question. To address the first one, it's 6 months during the year. They don't have to be consecutive unless the component or the module that you're following requires consecutive months. And there is at least a couple of places in the MDRO module where consecutive months are required. But it's 6 months throughout the year. In the MDRO module, again, you have the choice of doing infection surveillance using HAI definitions, just like you would in any other location, or lab ID event surveillance, which would include colonizations. Well, lab ID events are based on clinical culture results. So these are cultures being taken for clinical purposes, and usually that means the patient has some kind of sign or symptom. So you are allowed in the MDRO module to include active surveillance testing data and to get metrics from those data. So that is an option.
Thank you.
Okay.
The next question will come from the line of Sherry Kirshner of Tenet Healthcare.
Hello, Dr. Horan. I was wondering if eventually NHSN would accept hospital data from approved vendors.
Yes.
Is there a timeline for that?
Yes. In the fall, we expect to be able to accept data from vendor systems for central line associated bloodstream infections and corresponding denominator data, as well as surgical site infections and corresponding denominator data. So those are the first that will be rolled out in the vendor solution.
And so when that's done, you'll send us a list of the approved vendors then, I guess, with maybe in the newsletter?
We could do that, but, you know, it's not that we're going to be approving the vendors. Basically, the information that a vendor needs will be made publicly available on our website. We're just working on that part of our website now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you use a vendor system, you know, you should check with them to see if they have that capability.
I see. And I had one other follow-up question. Is will there be built into the system some sort of validation process?
Good question. Built in. So that's I don't know if that's the key part of your question, or is it more about validation?
Well, more about validation. How would that be done? Will it be required, and how will it be done?
Right. Okay. Well, there are some sort of validation pieces built in already in terms of cross-field edit checks and all of the information about the specific criteria that were used when identifying the infection. That all has to be entered now. So that helps with validation, although it doesn't ensure it. The state health departments that are using NHSN have been very active in the validation arena. So if you're in one of those states, you can expect to have some kind of validation done by your health department there. We are looking at developing ways of annual learning in terms of, like, posting case studies that people would have to complete before they could renew their digital certificate in a given year to help with validation, as well as actually conducting formal validation studies. So there's a lot to validation, and there's a lot of different arenas that we're looking at.
Thank you.
Sure.
The next question will come from the line of Roberta Kish.
Hi. I was wondering, back on slide number 32, you mentioned that you should mark no if for MDRO infection if you're not looking at an MDRO in that particular unit. So, for example, you have here bloodstream infection is your event type, and you wrote MDRO no for
right.
the MedSurg ICU. So I just want to be sure that I understand. If in my monthly plan, if I said that I was looking at the MedSurg ICU and I was looking at MRSA, would I be marking yes to this, or does this not even come up?
Okay, so on this slide that you're looking at, what is the location of that infection? MedSurg ICU?
The MedSurg ICU,
yeah.
Yes.
If you are monitoring, if you said on your monthly surveillance plan that you're monitoring MRSA infections in the medical surgical ICU in that month that you're reporting the infection event,
okay,
then you would say yes to that question.
Irregardless of the event type, whether it's bloodstream infection, UTI, whatever.
Right, because...
Correct, okay.
Yes, that's correct. Now, if, let's say, you're reporting this for a burn ICU and you're not following burn ICUs for the MDRO module, then you would say no, even though you would go, even though that might be an MRSA infection that you're entering. So
okay.
It's about the module, not about the. It's about whether you're following the module, yes or no, for that particular organism in that location.
Okay, and it would be a different location if, for example, the patient was transferred in and it's got that location rule.
Yes.
About where it developed and was acquired.
Right. If it meets, I think I understand what you're saying, and I think
yes.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Okay. That helps clear that up. Thank you.
Sure.
And the next question will come from the line of Susan Elder.
Yes, Dr. Horan, in the scenario where the state joins the group, and the states have the capacity to pull the data, will they be able to obtain facility identifiable data?
If you remember the slide, and I'll see if I can find it here, it's coming up on your screen. On the first row of this confer rights screen, it says patient with or without identifiers, patient data. If you confer without identifiers, they will not be able to see the identifying information.
Actually, I was talking about the facility being identified rather than the patient.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because
the facility will be identified.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But it would be identified to the state but not to the other facilities in the group?
That's correct.
Okay.
Unless, and at least not through NHSN. Now, usually what a group does, for example, a state health department with mandatory reporting is going to take all the facility-level data and publish it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So when you confer rights to a group, you need to understand what that group plans to do with the data. But through the NHSN reporting tool itself, a facility is only able to see and interact with their own data, no one else's.
Okay, I was just confused about that because it seemed if the state was just another member of the group, then they would be shielded from the identity of the facility.
No, the state is actually the group itself.
Oh, the state is the group.
Yes, okay. They are the group.
But another facility has to actually allow them to be the group. Is that correct?
That's right. One facility, one NHSN member facility, has to take responsibility for nominating any group.
Okay.
And once that group is nominated, then any facility can join that group.
Okay. So
they have the joining ID and password.
Okay, so the nominator doesn't have any other access. Only the state would have the access for
that's
everyone.
Right.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you.
No, that's a great question. Thank you.
Before we take the next question, Teresa, another question. Would very small hospitals, 50-bed hospitals, be too small to participate is the question?
We don't have any restrictions on size or type of facility. So there are small hospitals that do participate in NHSN.
Okay, thank you. Valerie, next question.
The next question will come from the line of Jan Lipinski.
Hi, Teresa. I'm back to this MDRO infection module.
Yeah.
Again. We're participating in a pilot study here in Chicago and have had to enroll in that. I'm finding it really cumbersome because I'm enrolled for one unit, only one unit, and then when it comes up and I put an infection in and I put no because it's not that unit, it's still saying if you're enrolled in the module, you have to put yes. I get a pop-up all the time.
Yeah, that's a warning message. It doesn't prohibit you from continuing on. It's meant to make sure you know that's what you're doing.
I wasn't quite sure because it seemed like I know because I've got my plan right in front of me. I know what I'm doing.
Yes.
And then it keeps telling me you have to enter it as yes. You know, it's like, no.
Yeah.
So I was just curious on that.
Right. And if you have any more specific questions like that, please do email our NHSN at CDC mailbox, and somebody can call you and talk to you specifically about that.
Okay. Thanks so much.
What is the specific email, Teresa, so that if there are any other questions on, you know, data entry or screens for users, they could email those questions to you. It's nhsn@cdc.gov. Okay, so that's the email address, nhsn@cdc.gov for specific questions on functionality for users.
Yes.
Thank you. Next question, Valerie?
The next question will come from the line of Tammy Wagoner.
Yes, I have two questions. The first one being for mandatory reporting and the SSI module, I've heard that there's a possibility that you won't require all of the data elements on the sheet, just the three elements required for risk stratification and rate calculation. Is that a rumor or is that true?
I'm afraid that's a rumor.
Okay.
We are actually planning and are currently analyzing all of the data that are being reported under that risk factor section, and we're planning to publish risk models, the results of our risk models, and build those into NHSN reporting in the analysis to give you better risk adjustment of surgical site infection data by procedure. So we will probably be phasing out the risk index over the next several years.
Okay. So like where it asks trauma and some of that other information that you collect for research purposes, that all would be required?
Yeah, that's not for research purposes. That is for risk adjustment purposes.
Okay.
And we will, as I say, we will be using the data in risk model.
Okay. And then my last question is, one of the struggles that we have as a system in using the SSI module is that we are not able to get our cases coded within 30 days.
Uh-huh.
Has the CDC heard that from other folks out there, and is there any consideration for lengthening that period of time at all?
We have heard that from a few users, and what we would say is if you're in a state that uses NHSN for mandatory reporting, you need to work with your state to be sure that you can meet their need for your data, and we can be flexible to help you do that. So if are you in a state with public reporting?
Yeah, I'm in Texas, and it's just now getting underway. So we're trying to figure out how we're going to meet this. Currently, it takes
typically
about 45 days for our cases to be coded.
Typically for us, I mean, while we have that as a rule and we think that it's, you know, most useful to the individual facility to have data available as soon as possible, you know, we like to stick to it. But we understand that it's, you know, it's, we can be a little bit more flexible, but if your state uses NHSN as its reporting tool, then you really need to make sure they that you meet what their requirement is, because sometimes they're even more stringent than we are, than
okay.
we are willing to be, I guess I should say.
Thank you.
Sure.
Valerie, could you tell me how many more questions we have in the queue?
Yes, ma'am. I would say maybe 9 or 10.
Okay, maybe we can get through them, a couple of them still in the next couple of minutes. I just wanted to ask you, Teresa, mm-hmm. to repeat the time of the users meeting at APIC for the group they've asked.
Okay, I believe it's 5:15 to 6:15 on the Monday of APIC, which is what, June? I believe that's June 8th, Monday, June 8th, 5:15, 6:15, in the Floridian A conference room. And if you, and it is for NHSN members, and they've received an email or a newsletter with that information in it. Those newsletters, by the way, are posted on the website.
And we have about 4 more minutes, so we'll see how many questions we can get through in the next 4 minutes. So let's ask quickly so we can move through. Valerie, next question.
Cindy Budelman.
Thank you. I wanted to know if you could tell me, in the MDRO module, on the summary data, we have to enter patient days and number of admissions to the specific unit. And typically, CDC does a great job of defining everything, and I haven't found that to be the case with this particular module. And I'm wondering if the number of admissions also includes transfers in, because I've been counting them as that, because there are people going in, but they may have been admitted to another part of the hospital.
It's admission to that location, so yes, transfers in do count.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Next question.
And the next question will come from the line of Laura Homer.
Hello, I'm calling from Northern California, and as I continue to set my priorities in this ever-shifting infection control world, our hospital is a small hospital, less than 100 beds, actually 37 beds, or 25 beds rather, and then a long-term care unit attached. I am reporting the device-associated module through NHSN, and our state does mandate reporting to the state and use of the NHSN system. I have not yet begun to report any surgical site infections, though internally we track that. And I was wondering if I just need to check with the state about their requirement for that. Currently they're requiring that we report deeper organ space SSIs not reported through NHSN. But I have not begun to report through NHSN for any surgical site infection. So could you give me some guidance on that?
Well, if you choose to use NHSN for monitoring surgical site infections following whatever procedures,
mm-hmm.
And you want to include it as part of your plan, which we would encourage you to do so that we can use your data, then you need to just simply follow the protocol for that for surgical site infections, and which means that you cannot limit it to just deep in organ space. You would be following incisional infections as well.
Right.
Superficial incisional.
And we have all that data. It's just for,
yeah, so you,
know,
you can start reporting at any time.
And then will there be an effort to have small hospital-specific data? I know you said that you're not limiting the size of the hospital, but for the small hospitals, will there be an effort to segregate that data in some fashion so we're
Sure. What we're doing, what we always do, is we look at the data and we see whether, for comparative purposes, it needs to be stratified or in any particular way to provide meaning. So if there is if the data suggests that bed size is an important thing that needs to be used for risk adjustment, then we would report the data that way. So we are constantly looking at the data to see what are the important factors that need to be accounted for. If you don't see us making a stratification or some kind of an adjustment, that means that we did not find it to be important for intra-hospital comparison.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
The next question.
All right, we're going to take one more question, then we're going to have to end the call. Again, as Teresa Horan said, if you're a user and you have a user question, it's send an email to nhsn@cdc.gov. Last question, Valerie?
The last question will come from the line of Kathy Ward.
Yes, I just have one quick question. In the MDRO module, there's a line that says, been discharged from facility within the past 3 months. Does discharge from the facility also include if they just came in as an outpatient, maybe lab tests, radiology, or ER visit, or is it just the 24-hour stay?
For infections, it's inpatient, so it would be they would have to have come in. I believe it's through the have been an inpatient and been discharged.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, I think that that ends our session. Lauren?
Great. Yep, that brings us to the end of our session. Again, thank you to everyone for participating. I think it was a great call. Check your email in the next couple hours, and you'll get instructions on how to download this presentation and the materials, associated materials. Please remember to visit our Advisor Live webpage at premierinc.com frequently. We're always adding new programs, and we'll base those programs on the feedback that we get from you in the survey today. Everybody have a good day. Thank you. And speakers, please stay on the line.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.